It's Bishop on Air. Shout out to those joining us this morning. Ed, if I had prizes to give out for first comments, good morning. Brian, Treston, John, Jordan, Crawford, JL, Cyrus, Craig, Thalion, Nyree, Christopher, Luke, Friedman Brock, Dangerous Liberty, Sergio, Rawhide, Keith, Doobie Lou, Joseph, two in a row, Randall Munson, Chubby Guy Customs, Tenebris, John, Nathan, Dr. Fark, Roman, Joe, Bass Life 217, Pearl, pretty good to see everybody in here. And that's across, we do the show on YouTube, Facebook, and X. Festus Nakuda, Breg Gishop, good morning. Appreciate you guys. All right, some things to talk about today. The Illinois legislature, of course, is back in session. They passed dozens of bills onto final passage, everything from requiring schools do allotment. Reconnection successful. All right, so hopefully that doesn't screw anybody up this morning. Knock your wood and cross your fingers. Let's see if we can keep the stream going throughout the day. All right, so brief breather. We'll be back. We got to talk about population with Governor J.B. Pritzker responding to questions yesterday about the state continuing to lose population and a representative at the State House calling Pritzker a population denier. We've also got to talk about Cook County Sheriff Tom Darts up in Chicago discussing things he wants to see happen with what he calls illegal firearms. But we've also got to get to the latest in gun ban litigation, and that's coming your way next here with Bishop on Air. All right, stay tuned. Plenty to come here with Bishop on Air. Like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. Parties are reminded the court intends for this matter to be resolved on an expedited basis. That is the message from Judge Stephen McGlynn in the Southern District of Illinois Federal Court yesterday with a status hearing on the merits of a challenge against Illinois' gun and magazine ban. And this happening while you also had a conference of the U.S. Supreme Court to consider several gun ban challenges in Illinois and also in Maryland. Still no indication as to which way the U.S. Supreme Court's going to go on those preliminary questions. But the bottom line is the Southern District of Illinois Federal Court is moving forward on the merits of Illinois' gun ban. So that's what we're talking about here. It's Bishop on Air. Thanks for hanging out. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell, and let's get right on into this. It was a big day yesterday for the issue of Second Amendment and how states can go about, possibly banning certain types of firearms. As you know, Illinois banned the possession and sale of semi-automatic firearms over a certain capacity of magazines as well. There was a gun registry that the state set up, but the gun registry has really been abysmal from all accounts. But clearly you've got the issue in the courts and something that a lot of people have stake in, right? I mean, there's more than 2 million firearm owner ID card holders in the state of Illinois. I would imagine a good swath of them have certain types of banned firearms. So again, go to thecentersquare.com. If you're not familiar with it, it's where I work full time. It's a nonprofit newswire service, and we focus on what's going on at the Illinois State House. But you'll see Supreme Court of the United States considers whether to take Illinois' gun ban challenges. And this, of course, all, happening more than a year and almost a year and a half now after the state enacted a gun and magazine ban. I chatted with Hannah Hill. She is with the National Foundation for Gun Rights, the executive director. And we had a conversation about the U.S. Supreme Court and them taking these cases into conference and what exactly that means. I had a picture in picture in there. What exactly it means to have a Supreme Court conference. And here's a bit of a conversation I had with Hannah Hill yesterday.
Conference is basically when the justices essentially sit down around a conference table and take the first look at cases, officially discuss the cases that have been brought before them for appeal. Typically, a case that they end up taking will have been discussed a few times at several different conferences. That process is called relisting it. So they could decide today to reject the case immediately. They could decide to accept the case and grant certiorari immediately. And then we would move into the briefing and oral argument stage. Or they could, as I mentioned, they could release it. Or, sorry, they could relist it. They could punt it multiple times if they wanted to do that. Just by way of putting that into perspective, Bruin itself was relisted four different times before they officially granted cert. And I've seen some that, you know, are relisted 10, 11, 12 times. Sometimes when you get into that level, it's an indicator that they've decided not to take the case, but there is a justice or two who are writing a dissent from the denial of cert. So that everyone else has decided to reject the case. A couple of them think they should take it and they want to lay out their reasons why. We've actually gotten a couple of really good Second Amendment defenses or dissents in the years in that dry spell between Heller and Bruin over the years in that way. At this point, it's a waiting game, and it's a lot of speculation because nobody knows what happens in that room, and nobody knows exactly what's on the mind of the justices as they're considering it. But I would say, just based on what we know of the court, an immediate decision today, I would be nervous about. If they do decide to make a decision today, then we will probably know about it on Monday when they release their orders. You know, a long list of orders, cases they've accepted, usually only two or three cases they are issuing additional orders in, and then a whole long list. The rest of the document is typically going to be cases they've rejected. And every lawyer that has a case pending is frantically scanning down that document.
So clearly there's some waiting here that we could have to endure. Monday, we could see a list of the cases they accept or the cases they deny. You've got at least four cases from Illinois, from the Southern District of Illinois and from the Northern District of Illinois that were put into conference. But there was also a case out of Maryland that was also put into conference. And what's interesting here is the Illinois Attorney General, Kwame Raoul, earlier this month, he filed a brief in the Maryland case in an appeals court case to support Maryland's ban on semi-automatic firearms. And in a statement he released earlier this month, he said states should be able to protect residents and communities by upholding laws that restrict the sale and possession of assault weapons and large capacity magazines. Maryland's ban, a little different than Illinois's in that, yes, it bans semi-automatic firearms of a certain kind that legislators there defined as quote unquote assault weapons. But it also banned magazines over the capacity of 10. So you can't have magazines that hold 11 rounds, for instance. Illinois, they split that up. They said no more than 15 rounds in a handgun, no more than 10 rounds in a rifle. But regardless, Kwame Raoul, the Illinois Attorney General, saying that states should be able to protect residents and communities by upholding laws that restrict the sale and possession of, quote, assault weapons and large capacity weapons. I will continue to collaborate with fellow attorneys general who prioritize public safety by defending common sense gun safety measures. The question, though, is can you do that under the Second Amendment, right? And that's the question that the courts are having to grapple with. The Southern District's looking at it on the merits after already having dealt with it on preliminary issues going up to the appeals court, and that's the preliminary issues that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be looking at, and we could possibly know by Monday if the U.S. Supreme Court's going to take those things. But what does a quick turnaround mean for the cases? Hannah Hill from the National Foundation for Gun Rights, a little weary about a quick turnaround.
So again, it's pure speculation, but I would be nervous about that. I think it's a lot easier to decide immediately to reject a case than it is to decide to take it. And for that reason, if they decided today on the case's disposition, I would be a little nervous about that. Experts that know more about the court than I do, Mark Smith at Four Boxes Diner, he is predicting that we will get at least a couple of relists on this one. And he's also predicting that we may have reason to hope that they'll take it eventually. I definitely hope he's right on that. And certainly he's more of an expert on the Supreme Court than I am. At this point, we know they've had this case on their radar for a while. Last year, we brought this same case to them on an emergency basis a couple of times. It was pending on that emergency basis when the Seventh Circuit issued their ruling. And at that point, it made sense not to take it on an emergency basis because they knew that our cert petition would be coming as the very next step. So we know they've been looking at it. We know at least one justice has been interested enough to ask for a briefing on it from Illinois in response on both of those emergency appeals. So we hope that interest translates into interest in at least considering it seriously for cert, especially since it's not just our case. Ours is one of a whole handful that have been consolidated and come up from the Seventh Circuit. And of course you have the one from the Fourth Circuit that's also pending there as well. So, and we know that they can look down the dockets and that they can see a whole bunch of other assault weapons ban cases, many of which are ours, from different parts of the country that are queuing up to land before them. That being the case, if they decided to reject this one, it wouldn't necessarily be a reason for discouragement. We know there's a couple of cases in California that will be coming to them on the merits as soon as the Ninth Circuit finishes with that process. We have a couple that are in Colorado also on the merits. Now, those are a little bit behind. Those are not at the appellate level. Those are at the district court level. So it'll be a little bit longer before they, again, we think it'll be a little bit longer, but the Ninth Circuit is pretty determined, it seems, to slow roll it as much as possible. If the district court and the Tenth Circuit are a little bit prompter, it may be us going to the Supreme Court on the merits and not an interlocutory basis as these are. So that's kind of the situation. We know that what we've seen from the Supreme Court since Bruin is that they want the right vehicle for Second Amendment cases. Now, they don't do that with every issue. So it's worth asking them to weigh in on that interlocutory basis on the preliminary injunction stage, right? Instead of this has gone through a trial on the merits, we've gone through discovery, we've had the actual trial, and we weighed all the findings of fact, all of that sort of stuff. They don't always require that. We've seen them weighing in on an interlocutory and even an emergency basis on a number of other hot button issues. So we hope that in light of the last couple of years of absolute defiance of Bruin from the lower courts, one of the points we've made in our brief is that's been unanimous from the lower courts on this issue. And we hope that they will take a look at that. And in response to that, they will say, okay, this is not going to change. And they would be right to say that it's not going to change until the Supreme Court weighs in and says, oh no, we actually meant what we said in Bruin. We actually meant what we said in Heller. And we expect you to apply this to the low hanging fruit of assault weapons ban cases.
So again, some of the conversation I had with Hannah Hill, National Foundation for Gun Rights, talking about the U.S. Supreme Court having gun ban challenges in conference. But I think most of those are on an interlocutory basis, which means the case hasn't been fully resolved in the lower courts, right? And she talked about other cases, including one out of California that may be more ripe. You've got other cases across the country, including the Southern District of Illinois, where they're dealing with the merits of this case. And yesterday, also, while the U.S. Supreme Court was having their conference, you had the Southern District of Illinois Federal Court hold a status hearing and a minute order in the docket of that case. Talks about the status hearing and what was discussed, all of the attorneys listed there. And it says, in accordance with the court's order issued during the status and scheduling conference, the parties shall meet and confer to prepare a joint report of parties and proposed scheduling order addressing the plan for experts' depositions. And those are essentially, questions and answers of the experts that the attorneys can present to the court, as well as the proposed timeline and format of the final evidentiary hearing. The parties are reminded that the court intends for this matter to be resolved on an expedited basis. Then it gives some more deadlines. It says that a joint report's due by May 24th. The government shall provide an update no later than May 31st on whether expert witness Dr. Martin Schreiber shall submit an amended expert report or whether the government will rely on the expert report submitted earlier in this case. And we kind of touched on Dr. Martin Schreiber. Apparently the state wasn't able to obtain him. And he's also on administrative leave from his place of work. Ultimately, you've got another status conference set for June 20th, where Judge Stephen McGlynn will again hear more of where we're at on all of this. And if you recall, when we talked with Thomas Magg, the attorney for the Langley plaintiffs in this consolidated case challenging Illinois' gun ban, he had indicated that the judge at the previous status conference said that he's kind of thinking July 8th might be when they start this trial on the merits of this. But with the U.S. Supreme Court possibly taking some of these gun ban challenges on an interlocutory basis, meaning in the middle of the case, what does that mean for the Southern District? Again, more from Hannah Hill from the National Foundation of Gun Rights.
Everything that I just said is all the more reason for that case to march forward on the merits. So, and until the Supreme Court actually takes action, then I would expect that case to proceed as planned. A relist is very deliberately not an action. It's not any indicator on what the Supreme Court will do. It's just basically a delay of any final decision. Now, if they were to take the case, then you could be looking at possibly some of these assault weapons ban cases in the lower courts, including that one, maybe going on hold, waiting for the disposition of the Supreme Court. You may not see that because, any case that they take right now, we're not going to be looking for an opinion on it until next year. We wouldn't be scheduled for oral argument on it until next fall at the earliest. So that's a lot of time for cases to proceed. But as the date of a decision gets closer, then you would probably start seeing, the district court judges and the appellate court starting to hit the pause button on their cases, because they know that very soon they're going to be getting some additional case law guidance from the Supreme Court on that issue.
But as a lot of people in the live chat have pointed out, it's been more than a year, almost a year and a half since the gun ban was enacted in Illinois. And there's a common saying within the Second Amendment community that a right delayed is a right denied. What should people think about this?
That's right. In the first place, they should know that we and the other organizations on these cases in Illinois are doing everything in our power to bring them relief quickly. We have no control on how quickly that will happen at the Supreme Court, but everything that is humanly possible in the legal system has been done. Second, though, more to the point, they should feel very angry, and they should make sure to deliver accountability to the people who did this to them, their own lawmakers at the ballot box. That's what they should do. That means mobilizing and getting involved in campaigns, and it means voting gun rights. Even if you can't necessarily replace somebody with an ideal candidate, there's a lot of accountability in ensuring that somebody who voted to take away your gun rights at this level never returns to that seat.
Again, thanks to Hannah Hill, National Foundation for Gun Rights, and chatting with me briefly yesterday. And we'll keep you updated on what happens here. Plenty more steps to follow as we track the cases challenging Illinois' gun and magazine ban here with Bishop on Air. Greatly appreciate you guys being here each and every weekday morning. Like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell, all right?
Population, we've been bleeding opportunity, and I'm really shocked that J.B. Pritzker is a population denier.
That is State Representative Chris Miller yesterday responding to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who yesterday was asked about the continued population decline in the state of Illinois after new census data comes out and says that Chicago continues to lose people. Again, welcome back to Bishop on Air. I'm Greg Bishop. Thanks for hanging out. And be sure to check out thecentersquare.com where you can see the article Katrina Peterson put together. Legislator calls Pritzker a population denier after data shows Chicago loses more. We reported on this earlier in the week about the U.S. Census putting out data that essentially says that, there's a lot of large cities in the country in certain parts of the country where they're losing population. And Chicago's one of them. And actually, if you look at the data, a lot of Illinois cities are losing population from Springfield to Chicago. But Governor J.B. Pritzker asked about this yesterday in Springfield. The Center Square's Katrina Peterson asking the question of why do you think population continues to decline and what are you going to do to reverse that trend?
So to disabuse you and many others of a misimpression, there is, as you know, every 10 years a census that gets done. That's where people's doors get knocked on. People are filling out forms, right? And every 10 years, we literally count every single person in the state. And then in every year between those 10-year periods, 2010, 2020, 2030, between those years, there's something that's relatively new in the census world called the American Community Survey. And it's more like a poll. It's more sophisticated than a poll, but it's a poll that tries to determine what the changes are year to year in population. That poll has been inaccurate for the state of Illinois for more than 10 years. How do I know this? Because they've been doing this poll during the 2010s, from 2010 to 2020, and I saw the poll data, that information, every year. And when I was running, even I said, oh my goodness, you know, if we're really losing that kind of population, it's an emergency. It's something we need to, you know, get on, jump on. What populations are we losing? How do we keep them in the state of Illinois? How do we attract others and so on? It turns out when we actually counted people in 2020, we weren't losing hundreds of thousands of people. That was false. We counted every person, so you know that the accuracy is there. Now the question is, okay, well, if the ACS data is wrong every year and the actual count is right, and that is true, then, and by the way, in addition to the number that we originally counted, it turns out they do something called a post-enumeration survey, which basically checks the work. And the post-enumeration survey determined actually Illinois got undercounted. Even though we try to count every single person, some people are homeless and don't get counted. Some people are just hidden and hard to get to, and they didn't get counted. So what did they determine from that? Illinois gained population. We have more than 13 million people in the state of Illinois. Well, then 2021 came, and here came another ACS survey, and it showed another year of population loss reported by this survey that had been inaccurate for the 10 years earlier. That survey hasn't changed. So we've gone to the Census Bureau and told them how inaccurate this clearly is. And they believed us, and they went around and looked at the cities in the state that applied. We had a group of cities who kind of went to the Census Bureau and said, this is wrong, we're seeing more people than you are. And what did they do? They upped the numbers, the population numbers for each of those cities that were part of that application. So it's clear there's something wrong with the ACS data. And I know you guys keep reporting that we're losing population based upon that inaccurate data, but you should take what I'm saying as truth, that actually when we count people, it turns out we're gaining population.
So, again, the governor seems to just downplay the question and say that the federal government's estimates are woefully inaccurate. He said that there's more than 13 million people in Illinois. But you look at the U.S. Census page for Illinois, and it only says we've got 12.8 million. We lost a seat in Congress. We've lost many seats in Congress over the past 25 years. The annual estimates, a decade of decline, and we continue to lose population according to the census, even after the census did come back and say, okay, you know, there may have been an undercount of X tens of thousands of people, but we still, even with that undercount adjustment,
lost population. So interesting to again, as these numbers continue to come out, yeah, they're being reported on. And it's not just the Center Square reporting on it. I mean, the Chicago Tribune reporting on it as well. But the response from State Representative Chris Miller, something else that Katrina Peterson got yesterday at the Illinois State House.
Bleeding population, we've been bleeding opportunity. And I'm really shocked that J.B. Pritzker is a population denier. You know, the reason, one of the biggest drivers for people leaving the state is overtaxation, overregulation, the tyranny of what they've done with the individual tax, business tax, real estate tax, you know, when people are fleeing because of that, plus out of control inflation here, not only here, but everywhere right now because of the Biden-Pritzker policies. And so there's a lot of easy answers to these problems, but the first thing that you have to do is to admit that you have a problem and admit that your policies have created this mess.
So we'll continue to update population estimates as the U.S. Census puts those out, showing that Illinois continues to lose population. It's not just Illinois, it's other blue states continue to lose population to red states. I don't know if it's the weather that's causing that to happen. So there you go. Back and forth between a couple of elected officials on the issue of population here in the state of Illinois. It is Bishop on Air. Thanks for hanging out. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell and join us each and every weekday morning. Happy Friday. We'll talk with you soon with more Bishop on Air. Guys, I just looked at the time. We were going to talk about Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart wanting to go after firearms. We'll revisit that on Monday and discuss a bit about the things that the Illinois State House is looking to do. We'll do a full recap of a lot of what's going on at the Illinois State House as well. They've got until May 24th for adjournment. Will they be in this weekend? Not sure. We'll see. I'm hearing some rumblings that they could cancel Saturday and Sunday. They have those scheduled, so we'll see what happens there. But appreciate you guys being here. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. And shout out to those who are hanging out in the chat room this morning. This late in the program, John, Randall, Titus, JL, Aaron, Rawhide, Festus, Greg, do you use butch wax in your hair? No, it's Suavecito, actually. I don't know if that's butch wax or the equivalent, but my hair is always on. I used to have it down to my mid-back back in the day when I was in a rock band, but I don't know, either way. Plus, when I work out and hit the sauna in the morning, it's a little dicey. I should do one of those, like, makeup videos where I talk about the news and put makeup on. Apparently, that's how all the kids are getting their news nowadays. Yeah, rock band. All right. Tom, Trevor, AJ, Eduardo, Rawhide, Nakuda, Richard, Brian, Douglas, Titus, Kevin, Joey Jojo, Shibato on X. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday with Bishop on Air. Like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell, all right? Thank you.